minutes past the hour. It's the morning show with Preston Scott. Great to be with you. I'm Preston. That's Grant. It is Thursday, March the 4th, show number 4420 of the morning show with Preston Scott. Day 44 of America Held Hostage. You know, it occurred to me that I think for maybe I've done shows for about 25 or 30 of those 44 days. I've had to change the rundown every single day in some form or fashion because Joe Biden was president and Democrats were controlling Congress. It's their fault. Absolutely their fault. Anyway, good morning and welcome. We'll see if we can find a smile in the midst of all of this today. And so welcome to the show. I want to, my verse of the day, which is, of course, something we do. It's the 61763 segment. Look up the date in history. I think you'll figure it out. I want to circle back to what the verse was yesterday, because I want to tag on to that just a little bit. In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. Proverbs 16:9. We talked about how God establishes a step. How does he do that? And I want to go back to something, and some of you, a few of you will remember this name, Edwin Lewis Cole. Dr. Cole was really the inspiration behind me going forward with the Manly Minute, even though Dr. Cole has passed many, many years ago. I remember meeting him and getting to listen to him teach principles from God's Word. And one of them I really took ownership of and called it the Exodus principle. I don't know what he called it, but he was the first one that really illuminated this concept for me, and I want to share it with you. And this isn't about being a man. This is about being a Christian at this point. And his point was that if you look at the story of the Exodus, there's an amazing illustration for all of us to learn from. And he said, you can leave Egypt, but not necessarily get to the promised land. But if you set your course and get to the promised land, you will always leave Egypt. And if you look at what happened in the Exodus, you find that after leaving Egypt and the bondage of slavery, which is the analogy is, of course, sin for us, if you don't commit yourself to God's best in your life, Proverbs 16:9, letting him establish your steps, you will be like the Jews of the day, who murmured and complained against Moses and started to say, we were better off back in Egypt. Only a handful of the Israelites committed to going to what God had promised, Canaan, the promised land. The rest of them were just stuck wandering in the middle of the desert because they didn't commit to moving forward to God's best. So remember that principle. You can leave sin and slavery, but you'll want to go right back to it. You'll be tempted to go back to it. You may go back to it because you don't commit to going forward and targeting God's best for your life. So do you want to go there, go to the promised land, and absolutely live the bondage of slavery and sin behind? Or do you want to just leave slavery and sin behind without committing to going forward with God's best? See, I believe that's how God establishes your footsteps, is making that commitment. 10 minutes after the hour, this date in history is a good one. And SpaceX made history in a couple ways. And we'll get to that next as well on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Live, local, and laughter. It's The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Suddenly I'm not hearing it. Are you hearing it?
Nope, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, me either.
Oh, well.
Why'd that happen? Oh, I know why. Man. Never mind. It's my fault.
You see, we do something different and we get off track.
I do something different. Not we. This is on me. Here we go. That's what was supposed to be playing. This is what was supposed to be happening right here.
That was some of the most awkward.
We were supposed to transition into Throwback Thursday. And I'm just, man, it was set up so perfect. We had the liner, and it was News Radio 100.7 for here in Tallahassee, or News Radio 94.5. And boom! It's kadoosh! It's right there. I joke about it. One of these days, I'm going to get it right. Anyway, welcome to the program. This date in history, it's March the 4th. March 4th, here we go. U.S. Constitution goes into effect as the first session of Congress meets in New York City in 1789. Vermont becomes the 14th state in 1791. Bernie Sanders ran for office that year, if I'm not mistaken. 1791, I think for the first time. Do you know Bernie Sanders' background, folks? Do you know what he's done?
Honeymoon in the Soviet Union?
No, professionally.
Oh, well,
he wrote quasi porn.
Oh yeah, I was going to say. Mean,
guys, just
what a weirdo.
He's a trip. 1829, the White House is overrun with partygoers when Andrew Jackson holds an open house to celebrate his inauguration. That's not happening anytime soon. Illinois legislature grants a city charter to Chicago in 1837. Abraham Lincoln delivers his second inaugural address in 1865. Oh, man. The things that shape history happen like that. What if Abraham Lincoln lives out his term and survives through maybe the end of the century? And in 1933, Frances Perkins, Secretary of Labor in FDR's administration, becomes the first woman to serve in the cabinet. That had to be small, tight space, serving in the cabinet like that. Ooh, tight quarters. SpaceX yesterday. Did you see what happened?
I didn't.
First, I admire everything that they do. I really do. It's amazing. If you've never watched one of the launches where they land the rockets right back down, two of them back on the pad and one of them out on a barge that's a drone, no people are on it in case something goes bad, and they've missed sometimes. I watched one live feed where the big main rocket was coming down on the barge in the Atlantic, and it missed by 20 feet. You just see it go boop, whoops, right off the stern, straight into the drink. Down it went. It just missed. But yesterday they were doing a test of the SpaceX Starship SN10, taking it up, and then it levels out. It goes horizontal, so it shoots up vertical, goes horizontal after about 10 kilometers, and then starts to float down, and then they hit the jets and the boosters, right it, and land it. They nailed the landing. And then within a few minutes, the whole thing blows up.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
It blew up. It exploded on the pad in Texas. This was a Texas takeoff and landing.
Wow.
Better get that one right. That's the one that's going to carry people. So, but I
have FLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
And free.
An iHeart's radio station.
Steve Stewart, next hour, Tallahassee Reports. Wow, what a story he's got on Ag Commissioner Nikki Fried. Lots of clouds. And we're not talking about smoking kind of clouds. We're talking about, what's going on over there kind of clouds. Really in-depth story about the agriculture commissioner and her fiance, who's still married. That's just a fact. And you know, whatever. That doesn't have anything to do with her job as commissioner. What has to do with her job as a commissioner of agriculture, questions about overlapping relationships that are, I think, confusing intentionally. I think there's an effort here to benefit her future husband using her position as Commissioner of Agriculture. It may be legal. It may be illegal. At the very least, it's questionable, perhaps unethical, but we'll see. The information's on the website. We'll talk to Steve Stewart about that in just a little bit. So it's not just Tallahassee-centric today. This is the state of Florida. We've got Dr. Steve Steverson, our Pause for Thought segment, hour number three. We've got Andrea Williams, my guest, and we will be talking about the First Lady of Baseball. Cannot wait. Cannot wait. Effa Manley. The story is just, it's interesting. So we've got something a little different there today. I still am the most frustrated fisherman ever. And it's not like something I obsess about. I joke about it.
You embrace it.
It's part of my identity at this point. It's who I am. It's kind of like, you know, that guy who just misses free throws. It's just what he does. He just misses free throws. Great player, misses free throws. I think I'm an okay guy. I just can't catch fish. It's almost as if I dropped a line in the water and caught a fish right now, I would think that God has just planted it in that fish's soul to bite that lure for me. Pal, give yourself up. Come on. I made you. Give yourself up. Jump on that lure. Because there's no discernible reason why I would ever catch a fish. I try. I've got decent equipment. I know a little bit about bait. But I'm just no good at it. However, many of you are. And so, I will point out to you that our friends at Salvation Army here locally are doing an inshore saltwater tournament. And so no matter where you are listening to me from within the Big Bend and Panhandle, you're always looking for a fishing tournament. Here you go. It is the inaugural Saltwater Slam. It's going to be June 12th at the Shields Marina in St. Mark's. Fishing for redfish, trout, and flounder. Youth and adult, sponsorships available. If you'd like to sponsor, be part of the event that helps kind of put this together, and it's to raise funds to help the community. Big fan of Salvation Army. Big, big, big fan of Salvation Army. If you want to be a sponsor, if you want to sign up, if you want to be a vendor, if you want to volunteer, I'm going to give you an email here. Ready? It's Margaret, M-A-R-G-A-R-E-T, dot Armistead, RMISTEAD at USS.SalvationArmy.org. Simple as that. I know that's not simple, but just reach out to Salvation Army locally in Tallahassee and take part in the inaugural saltwater slam. Fishing's a big deal around here. People love to put a line in the water. I do too, but I embrace the term, the word fishing, because there's not much catching that goes on around me. But I try, and I've got a new little inflatable pontoon boat that I'm about, well, about, maybe someday we'll put in the water. I've had it for a while. I'm getting there. If you have any tricks on fishing, feel free to send me an email, Preston@iHeartRadio.com.
Morning show with Preston Scott.
You can't handle the truth.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Thirty-six minutes after the hour, the morning show with Preston Scott. It is good to be with you this morning. I wish we weren't talking about the types of things that we talk about sometimes here on the show. I wish there were other things to discuss, but this is important. That California car crash that took the life of, 13 people? 12 immediately, 13, another person died a little bit. All of them, these two crashes were illegal immigrants that came through the country illegally with traffickers through a 10-foot gap in the border wall in California. One of the SUVs had 25 illegal immigrants crammed inside. That one killed 12. Crashed, caught on fire. 12 died, burned to death, died in the crash. The other SUV found in flames about 10 minutes after entering the U.S. had 19 people, and they were spotted hiding in the brush in bushes nearby. This is all the responsibility of Joe Biden. And I'll take a second and help out, because the mainstream media would be doing this to Donald Trump. The blood's on Joe Biden's hands. The blood's on Democrat hands, because they created this rush into the country. Our border people have no clue what to do anymore. They're being told catch and release. They're being told don't do anything. They're being told all kinds of things. This is all the caravan started before. Have you seen photos of people wearing Joe Biden shirts? Joe Biden t-shirts. Kind of a Biden, he's our man. And it's unbelievable. Of course, the mainstream media is not spending a lot of time on this, because it points right back to Democrats and it points right back to the Biden administration. Their blood is on his hands. People enter this country illegally all the time. It happens. But this kind of thing had all but stopped in the final 2.5-3 years of the Trump presidency. And it's tragic. All Joe Biden has done is open up the floodgates for human trafficking into this country. He's damaged American jobs while doing so. He is trying to ensure for the Democrat Party another victim class. You realize there are efforts to allow illegal immigrants to vote in this country's elections? Do you know how categorically wrong that is? Of course you do. For those of you that don't, just think about your chances of voting in, say, France's elections. Let me know how that works out for you. The media, though, saving a little sound for you next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
first to know. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Related story, more than 100 illegal immigrants released by Border Patrol into Texas since late January have in fact tested positive for the coronavirus. And there's nothing we can do to keep them from traveling inside the country. And I'm thinking to myself, how about arresting them? Why did you let them go? Why? Oh, that's right, Joe Biden. That's right. Get your mind around that again now. In any way of looking at this, this is, again, another invasion of our country. People are entering into this country. Terrorists? Iran's not happy with us. Terrorists coming? And some of you voted for this because you didn't like Trump. He was so mean. He wasn't nice. He wasn't enough of a statesman. And I agree with that, but not to the point of my vote. You lost your mind. And so we're all going to pay the price. Congratulations. Now, speaking of COVID, everybody was gushing over Andrew Cuomo for the last 6-8 months. Mainstream media had been having an affair with Andrew Cuomo. Suddenly, they don't have much to say. Not a lot. Well, let's go back and think about why that might be.
David, we're standing by for Governor Cuomo's press conference, his daily briefing. How would you contrast Cuomo and President Trump's handling of the crisis?
Truth versus mendacity.
Governor Cuomo out there day after day after day. Everything Trump isn't. Honest, direct, brave.
Real leadership of the kind the President of the United States should have provided.
Governor Cuomo is clearly living in a totally different reality, the actual one, than the President of the United States.
Governor Cuomo has become a national leader.
For a lot of people, Andrew Cuomo has become the leader of the Democratic Party.
He is conveying incredible strength.
You spoke to National Guard troops today in a stirring speech that, if I wasn't listening carefully, I thought you were sending soldiers off to war.
This has been a remarkable show of leadership by Governor Cuomo in recent days. He's providing hope, but not false hope.
Governor Cuomo, no. I think, is one of the heroes on the front lines.
With all of this adulation that you're getting for doing your job, are you thinking about running for president?
Andrew Cuomo, who has a daily television show now and has become in some ways the shadow president.
Maybe Trump is just a little bit mad that Governor Cuomo has become a kind of acting president.
Dealing with hardship actually makes you stronger. That's what Governor Cuomo said earlier today. That's what I'm going to go teach my kids right now at home.
Yeah, attaboy, Brian. Brian Stelter there.
These people are sick.
Yeah.
They are living in such a cacophony of a lie. They are sick.
Bonus points for using lie. Good word. No, cacophony. Well done. It's easy to understand their inability to cover this story. They're begrudgingly covering things. Imagine if it were Greg Abbott. Imagine if it were Ron DeSantis. The satellite trucks would be parked in front of the governor's mansion, in front of his office, 24/7 until the pressure built and he had to step down. The combination of Andrew Cuomo's mishandling of COVID, shutting down the state, destroying the state economy and thousands of jobs to the point where businesses are just leaving. People of substance are just leaving. And, oh, by the way, sexual assault allegations from now 3 former aides. And he lied about COVID on top of all of it. If you listen to that montage, it explains everything. They can't say we were wrong. 46 minutes after the hour.
And when you want or listen again, the Preston Scott Podcast is at WFLAFM.com.
G'day, mates. Welcome to the first hour of the morning show with Preston Scott, even though it's almost over. Great to be with you. Show number 4420. I am Preston. Over there in Studio 1A is Grant Allen running the radio broadcast, unless I interfere and ruin the whole thing. And it's day 44 of America Held Hostage. It's why more and more people are dissatisfied with Joe Biden in the polling. Perhaps we'll get to that a little bit later. Just some interesting things regarding the president. Congress is nosediving again in its favorability and likability with the American people, but that's not a surprise. Again, what'd you expect? But anyway, we're here for you. Steve Stewart in just a little bit. Interesting story about Commissioner of Agriculture, Nikki Fried, and what appear to be some, at the very least, unwise dealings with her future husband and her family. And, I mean, it's, woof, just, it's the typical swamp type stuff by appearance. Does it go beyond that? We'll hopefully find out. But at the very least, by appearance, it's bad. And so we got Steve Stewart coming in just a little bit about that. Are you, Grant, are you any good at cornhole?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't played it in a while, but I like playing it. Yeah, sure.
But are you good?
I've won a few games, yeah.
Okay, against who?
Family, relatives,
okay,
you know.
Okay,
yeah.
Do you? What's your method? Are you a spinner? Do you toss the thing with a spin? Do you overhand toss it? What do you do?
Underhand.
Underhand?
High arc so that the impact, it just sticks.
Okay, that way, so you go high arc. You don't want it to slide into the hole. You want to get to the edge of it and let it fall right on in?
Could depend, though. Depend if you're trying to knock someone else's little sandbag off.
Okay, so what? That's the rule.
That's what I do.
So you don't know the official rules
of
cornhole?
I don't think there are. Well, there are official rules.
Well, of course there are. I mean, Johnsonville is the sponsor of the Cornhole National Championships,
but
I think.
Do the Cornhole National Championships have regulations on how you throw the bag?
No. Okay. No. But just in terms of the scoring. I know look, I know people, I know Preston at iHeartRadio.com, feel free. If you know the official scoring for cornhole, I've tossed up one of those bean bags maybe a half a dozen times in my life for that purpose. It appears as though that in tournament play, there are points for it going through and points for knocking one through, or do you get like partial points for one hanging on the edge? I mean, I don't know. Or is it just it has to go all the way through for it to count? Like if there's a pile up of beanbags and a corner of it still sticking above the hole as measured with a piece of paper going across it.
Yeah, I don't think those would count. I think it's one of two things. You either made it into the hole completely or on the board or off the board.
So on the board could earn you something?
Yes. I believe it's like 1 point, and then, correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, the going in is either like two or three.
Okay.
And then it's like first to 21.
Okay. Okay.
Something like that.
With equal turns?
Yes. You've got two people on each side.
You have
side.
To win by two?
I don't know.
Is it like ping pong? Got to win by two?
I think if you go over, you have to go back to like 11 or something like that.
Okay. Because see, this is something that I just, so it's like the game of 21 in basketball.
Yeah, probably.
Where if you go over, you got to
go back.
Oh, that's dumb.
It's tough, I think.
Well, the second cornhole tournament is going to be held at the TLC Double C.
Oh, yeah.
The Tucker Center. And so if you're interested, the Tucker Center Plaza is going to be the host on April 3rd, Saturday. You can register at TuckerCivicCenter.com. $30 per team in advance, $35 per team. here we are. Hour number two, Thursday on the Morning Show with Preston Scott, March the 4th. It's Grant Allen over there in Studio 1A. I am here in Studio 1B. It is show 4420, day 44 of America Held Hostage. And on Thursdays at 7 Eastern, we talk to Steve Stewart, the executive editor of Tallahassee Reports, the website TallahasseeReports.com. Hello, sir.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
I'm going to read the headline.
Go ahead.
Nikki Fried's connections to new cannabis company raise questions.
Yes, we got bored with things here in Tallahassee and decided to.
Oh, you did not.
No, we are flush everywhere. This, you know, this is, it took a couple of weeks to get all this together because we're heavy in documents. You look at the story and it's over 1,000 words and it's got 7-8 links to documents. And so to set this up, I think you have to understand who Nikki Fried is. You know, she's agricultural commissioner. She barely won. Before that, she was a marijuana lobbyist. So her push for cannabis legalization and things related to
it
that.
It really dovetailed with the initiative that John Morgan had on the ballot.
Exactly. And so so she traveled in those circles before she was elected in 2018. And while she was traveling, she met a man named Jake Bergman, who was the CEO of Sotera, which is the second biggest medical marijuana company behind Trulieve in Florida. They've changed their name since to Parallel. So they start.
Do you know why?
I'm not sure. Maybe just I'm not sure why they changed the name.
But okay.
So anyway, they began a relationship before she was elected, he's still married to a woman in Atlanta. But they began a relationship and went into this the race for agriculture commissioner together. She won. He immediately stepped down as the CEO of Sotera, as if to say, "I'm going to try to avoid any conflicts."
Mm-hmm.
It was widely reported he still had significant financial interest in Sotera, obviously, and how the medical marijuana industry moved forward. But anyway, he stepped down. And
can I ask you, does that present an issue once they've apparently intended to become married? Does that become an issue if that then it's her husband's, future husband's company that he has a financial interest in?
Well, that's a great question, and there's some other papers that basically touched on that issue. But to your point, what happened after she won, they moved in together with a house in Northeast Tallahassee, and suddenly her net worth went up close to $1 million. Now,
sure.
We wrote an article about that. There was other papers across the state that followed up on that. That largely went away. But so she's been, since that time, she's been pushing cannabis policy. She's been doing whatever she could do to get, to impact cannabis policy. She appointed Holly Bell as the director of a cannabis department in agriculture.
Right.
Which was there to try to impact marijuana policy, hemp policy. Hemp is another issue that's covered under agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
She created a medical advisory board and appointed industry officials to this medical advisory board. So there's no doubt that she was pushing to have an impact on policy. Now, if you go back to Mr. Bergman.
Just pause?
Go ahead.
That in and of itself would be within the realm of her job as agriculture commissioner, though, given the status of marijuana in Florida now, correct?
Yes, I think she obviously was trying to, the cannabis director obviously was more policy recommendations.
Sure.
But the regulation of hemp rules on how to cultivate hemp, which there was a big bill passed in 2019, fall clearly under her job description. So she is basically, again, an advocate for this. And, you know, back to Mr. Bergman, who stepped down from being the CEO of Sotera, you know, he traveled with her to Israel at one point. So, I mean, and there's been articles written about how, you know, after she got elected, that suddenly they were going to get married, you know, and so this has been, they've been engaged for over a year. Again, he's still married, so I guess they're waiting on a divorce. But the point is, what is Mr. Bergman doing? And so we got a little bit of a tip, and so I started looking at documents and obviously registrations of LLCs. And it appears that he is getting back into the business of having a marijuana company, but it hasn't been. And it actually, that people have written about him having a cannabis company. But what was the interesting thing is when you start pulling these registrations with the state of Florida, the people that are connected to Mr. Bergman and Ms. Fried, and that we can talk about that when we get back.
Steve Stewart with me, executive editor, Tallahassee Reports, the website, TallahasseeReports.com. 10 minutes past the hour, a little check of weather and traffic.
Morning Show with Preston Scott.
What's up, Doc?
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
11 minutes after the hour with Steve Stewart, the executive editor. Go to the website, get the paper, TallahasseeReports.com. The headline, Nikki Fried's connections to new cannabis company raise questions. And, of course, Steve, so much of your reporting, you get tips from people that know where to find things or where to point you in certain directions. But it doesn't matter until you see documents. You need documentation. That's the hallmark of your reporting.
Right, and that's why we have links on these stories. And these people...
Sources.
Yeah, sources. The people won't talk to us about this unless you catch someone off guard, which we did with the attorney here, which I'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, there's documentation that you have to follow. We don't have access to bank accounts, so we don't know what's happening there. But we do have access to who is associated with companies. So picking up where I left off... So right after he stepped down as CEO of Sotera, a couple months later, he started a LTD, a company, a Tatooine, which is a Star Wars reference, I guess, in Nevada. And Mr. Bergman is listed as the president, the treasury, the secretary, and whatever else. So it's obviously his company.
He's listed as all the officers?
Right, in the company in Nevada. And why that is important is because... He created three companies in Florida, all off of the name of Iconoclast, some variation of the name Iconoclast. And the first one was Iconoclast Ventures. And if you go look at the registration of that, it was created, and there's nobody's name on it. The managing entity of that company is Tatooine, which is registered.
Tatooine, by
Tatooine,
the way.
Tatooine, I'm sorry.
That's
Tatooine.
Okay. You got to know your Star Wars,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah. My son will be disappointed.
He will be.
Anyway, so that is that's the entity on the Iconoclast Ventures. Okay, so if you go to Iconoclast Ventures website, this is where it gets really interesting. You see that he is listed as the CEO, the founding and a founding partner. The operations founding partner the founding partner in operations is Ronald Fried, which is Nikki Fried's father, and another founding partner is a lady named Holly Utstein, probably mispronounced that, but she is married to a Florida state legislator, David Silvers. She's connected to the hemp industry. Okay, so remember we talked about the regulation of the hemp industry by Nikki Fried. So this company was started right during the session when a big hemp bill was being passed.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki Fried came out and said, this is a great day. The hemp industry, this is going to open up an $8 billion market in the hemp industry in Florida. Okay, well, so Iconoclast Ventures clearly says that they're a cannabis company, and they've got ties to, you know, the hemp industry through Ms. Utstein, and then Fried's father is a founding partner also. That creates a little bit of an issue. Next, they create another Iconoclast company, which is a nonprofit. And one of the principals on that is Mr. Bergman and an attorney named Zachary Cobran, who is a lawyer for Ackerman LLP, which has he is part of a world-class cannabis practice there. Okay. The thing about that, he's listed as a principal. The address of the company is Nikki Fried's personal residence. So I called Mr. Cobran, and he said he was Jake Bergman's lawyer and he couldn't comment. And I said, well, you can't comment on so the fact that you're Jake Bergman's lawyer and Nikki Fried has appointed you to the medical marijuana advisory board. At that point, he said he had to go and he hung up, which is fine. So now we have a company that is registered at Nikki Fried's house involving a cannabis attorney who she appointed to a board.
Okay. Who is the personal attorney for
Mr. Bergman,
but yet serves on an advisory board and is unwilling to comment in his role as an advisor, which is a quasi-public official.
Exactly. And he probably doesn't understand that yet.
Sure.
But, I mean, he will.
Benefit of the doubt.
Right. And then there was a third company that was created, Iconoclast One, and the principals there are Mr. Bergman and Hallie Utstein. So the question is, you know, what is he doing? Is he trying to take advantage of decisions being made by, you know, his fiancée, Nikki Fried, who is making decisions on these industry issues? Look, I think there's a couple things here. First of all, if this was Casey DeSantis starting these companies involving people that have an interest in policy that DeSantis
satellite trucks would be parked in front of the governor's house.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens with the mainstream or the print media here who is really, you know, hasn't really covered this at all. But it's laid out for them. They can probably have better access to these people than I would get. And they can just go through the documents. So we'll see what happens.
More with Steve Stewart next, 16 minutes after the hour on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
Dude, yes!
And iHeart's radio station.
One more segment with Steve Stewart, Tallahassee Reports. This is a story that goes well beyond Florida's capital city. This impacts the entire state.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this whole movement of people making money in office. We've seen this, you know, with
Republicans, Democrats. Oh, it crosses both lines.
It's become a career.
Yeah.
And it's become of, I think they push to see what's acceptable because, you know, they drive the politics, the emotional issues,
mm-hmm.
And then they try to make money while they're doing it, and they hope that people will just look the other way. The thing here is all the documents that's tied to this.
Well, let me ask. I think people would step back and in our first couple segments go, yeah, that looks a little weird. But from the perspective of, okay, she's the elected official. What's her exposure in all of this? Where's the problem?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, if you take the step back and say, if Casey DeSantis was setting up LLCs to make money off of decisions by the governor.
Mm-hmm. You know, or information that she's privy to.
Right. So the information idea is that, look, these companies were created for a reason. I don't know why. I mean, all I can see is they were created. They were created. The timing raises questions. So that's when you have to talk. But if you are trying to put up the perception that, you know, I'm stepping down from this company because I'm going to avoid a conflict of interest, and then you do this, then that's sort of, again, you have to talk and you have to explain what's going on here. You are in a business relationship with an attorney that your fiance just appointed to a board. Okay. She can't make money because it's going to show up on her Form 6. This very strict, you know, sourcing of where you're making your money. So now you're
public disclosure.
So now her father is involved. And so is this a way to keep money in the family? I mean, these are all questions. And this is, again, why you have to register these businesses, because of transparency. But
but one of these businesses, at least one, is registered in Nevada.
Right. And so not only that, and another one's registered at her personal residence. Now, the question I sort of had at the beginning, and I would have asked her if I could have talked to her, was she even aware of the creation of these businesses?
Yeah, because, fair question.
Right. And so the point, though, I think there's a couple of things here, is like the comparison we made to if it was another cabinet official's spouse, you know, that was doing this. The other thing is going to be interesting to see how the statewide media deals with this. This is not an issue about a judgment call of some action. These are documents. There are people's names on these documents. There are signatures. So this is cemented. There are businesses that are created with people that have interest in hemp and marijuana. And now we've got to figure out why you're doing this. Okay. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, the level of, you know, inquiry, I think, as we see with the governor, it shouldn't be any different. And so we'll see if Ms. Freed gets a pass on this.
What happens from here? Is it about when you write a story like this, you've got all these sources, and so everything's verifiable within your story. Do you wait for additional tips to come out? Do you wait for the people, the principals involved, to respond to questions? What's the next step?
So this is, they all don't happen this way, but this one, I had to pick a place to stop because we just kept pulling. There's more to write. There's more people that are connected and that I am digging into. I think the next story is going to be about this attorney who's on this medical advisory board. What decisions has this board made? What policies are they pushing? So I think that's going to be this is Bergman's lawyer. He told me that. I didn't know that till I talked to him.
And he's on the board of a company.
No, he's a medical advisory board appointed by Nikki Fried.
But his name's not listed on any of the corporate documents for any of these companies.
Yeah, they are. He's a principal agent under one of Bergman's companies.
So he may have a financial interest in these companies. That's my point.
Yes. That's going to be the next thing to look at. But there are different people that are registered in these companies that we can just start looking at and find out the connection. But look, this whole issue with cannabis and medical marijuana and hemp, a lot of money involved. And public officials, you're supposed to be running for office because you're wanting to serve the public. It's clear that, you know, in this relationship, somebody wants to make money and somebody's trying to do public service. Those usually aren't good mixes. They usually provide a lot of conflicts and require transparency, and they require the media to keep people honest. So,
yeah, I just have this sneaky feeling we're going to get to an area that's legal but not right.
Well, no, that's going to be exactly, you know, unless you can get into bank accounts, you know. But I think, again, people will start looking at this. Look, the point here is now that it's out there, it's going to impact behavior. So that's the idea, is as the media, you write about it so that you're helping keep people straight. But I don't know. We'll see if she gets a pass.
Thanks for coming in.
All right. Thank you, Preston.
Steve Stewart, get the paper. Subscribe. TallahasseeReports.com.
Thing your mom would say you should do because everyone else is doing it. You're listening to The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Minutes after the hour, halfway through Thursday on the Morning Show with Preston Scott, Grant Allen over there in Studio 1A. I butchered the end of the last hour of the show. I will endeavor to do better this hour. I've made a brutal mistake in each hour of the broadcast so far. Well, in the first hour was a catastrophic just disaster. I'm ashamed. I'm hurt and I'm ashamed by my own performance. I've sullied that young man's reputation because everyone thinks he did something wrong, and it was me. I did it. But I'll endeavor to do better. Before we get to our Pause for Thought segment, if you follow the progression of events, Joe Biden, Democrats begin their promise in the months leading up to the election that immigration is going to change. You realize there's a small little district, little voting thing in Mississippi or something that showed 78% of the mail-in ballot was fraudulent. Now, it's a very small election, few hundred ballots. 78%.
And the judge ordered a re-election.
Yeah. Now we're doing this again. And two Democrats. It's not a Democrat Republican. It's a judge looking at it going, no, this is wrong. Mishandling of it all. Well, the mail-in balloting created an opportunity for there to be cheating. Among the things that happened in this small little town was one address had 35, 36 voters registered to it. There's an address in Atlanta that had thousands of names registered to it, and they were allowed to vote. That's against Georgia state law. But they were allowed. So what does this have to do with Joe Biden and the immigration problem? It was part of the mix. It was part of the recipe for getting Joe elected, is having people vote illegally. So that opens the door. Immigrants, before the final votes were cast, were already preparing their caravans. When it was announced Joe Biden was the president, the caravans began moving. They began marching through Mexico. The agreement that President Trump forged with Mexico suddenly starts collapsing because Donald Trump's no longer in the White House. And so they, you know, they're like, okay, the new regime wants these people to come into their country, we're going to stand by and let them come. And so they're coming. So we get two SUVs, one SUV packed with 25 illegals, the other with 19, both getting crashes, 13 die in California. This happened because Joe Biden became president and Democrats retained control of Congress. That's why this happened. The caravans had stopped. Had illegal entry into the country stopped? No. But it was dramatically, dramatically cut. Now the gates are open. Almost literally. These guys drove through a wide open breach in the California border. Traffickers, they don't care. They're getting paid per head. Who's paying them, I wonder? Cartels? 40 minutes after the hour. Pause for thought next on The Morning Show.
The Hour of The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Always remember, if you have something you want to share with me, send me a story. Make sure you verify it before you send it. I've had to do that again this week. Send one back. It's Preston at iHeartRadio.com. All right, let's talk about our four-legged friends as we take a pause for thought here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Joining me, Dr. Steve Steverson at the Bradfordville Animal Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Steverson.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm gonna go ahead and take a deep breath, and I'm gonna go ahead and broach the subject of cats.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of them, but I know that a lot of you love cats and love your cat, and so I couldn't. It was difficult for me to get my mind around something you shared with me in an email last night that cats fight hypertension.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Is that like a big deal? I mean, what percentage of cats would you say that you see in practice are dealing with hypertension?
You know, it's not a huge percentage that have a problem with it, Preston. It's maybe 7 or 8% is what the number is. So it's not a lot, but it is a significant problem in that 7 or 8%. It can create a lot of issues in cats. They can have, it can cause kidney damage, it can cause vision problems, vision loss even, it can cause heart problems. So it's something we really need to regulate in those cats that have a problem with it.
Are the cats that fight it, are they a particular type of cat, or it can affect any cat randomly?
You know, it can actually affect any breed of cat.
Okay.
There are a few breeds that are a little more common in, we see it a lot in Maine Coon cats or even in Persians, but you can see it in any breed. So don't think if you have a particular breed, your cat is immune to hypertension.
Why do dogs not suffer from it nearly as often as cats?
You know, that's a good question. You'd think that dogs would have the same types of problems, but they don't.
Well, see, I think it's because cats are plotting to kill their owners.
Yeah. They are, you go outside and see your cat stalking something in the backyard, and
right.
You certainly realize their skill at hunting their prey, so you may want to sleep with one eye open, Preston.
Well, before we get to the treatment of it, what are some things that cat owners should be looking for in their cat as symptoms?
Yep, so if your cat has hypertension, certainly they start drinking large amounts of water, urinating excessively. They start to have trouble breathing. They can have vision problems, even sudden blindness sometimes. Those are the main symptoms that you will notice at home. Sometimes it can cause some change in behavior, and they'll start increasing in meowing and wandering through the house. And it actually is a change in their behavior because it affects their brain sometimes.
Is Dr. Steverson, are any of those symptoms, is it possible to confuse them for this time of year when allergies start kicking up in animals as well as us?
Well, usually if a cat has allergies and they have problems because of allergies and respiratory issues, it's more sneezing and coughing. They're not in respiratory distress.
Okay.
If they have a hypertension problem, it's affecting their heart and their blood flow, and they're going to have a much more, you can tell it's much more serious respiratory problems if they have hypertension.
And what do you do to treat it?
So it's medication. And fortunately, there's medication that can very effectively control hypertension in cats. It's a daily medication they have to take for the rest of their life. We measure their blood pressure just like they do in people with a little blood pressure cuff. So we can measure their blood pressure, determine they have high blood pressure, put them on medication very often. We have to recheck them and make sure the pressure is down. And then we occasionally, like maybe a few times a year, recheck their pressure, make sure we're controlling it. Some of the symptoms that you will see with a cat, once their hypertension is controlled, those symptoms will go away. Their vision can return oftentimes. And so a lot of times they can have a nice, long, healthy quality of life with their hypertension controlled.
Dr. Steverson, thank you so much. I never would have believed it, as cool as cats seem to be, that they fight this. But good advice. Thanks so much for the time today.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Preston.
Dr. Steve Steverson with us. Pause for thought here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
He's always been a white guy. Glenn Beck.
Right.
We got it. Licensed to talk. 9 to noon on WFLA.
Change gears in just a little bit. We've got Andrew Williams, author of the book, The Leading Lady of Baseball. Baseball's leading lady, I should say. And we've got some segments set aside for her in just a little bit. But first, it has been 44 days. President's been in office 44 days, and he's yet to take questions. And that includes yesterday at the end of a virtual meeting with Democrats in Congress. Listen to how it ended.
And I'm happy to take questions if that's what I'm supposed to do, Nance, whatever you want me to do.
And they cut the feed.
No, they didn't.
They cut the feed. He was not allowed to take questions from even his own party.
When he just said, oh, I'll take some questions. No.
If that's what I'm supposed to do. Now, I got to thinking, why would that be?
By the way, it's my little sister, Valerie, and I'm Jill's husband. Oh, no, this is you switched on me. This is my wife. This is my sister. They switched on me.
But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
There is not a single solitary reason in the world why, as I said, we shouldn't be in a position that everybody, and that's my wife, Jill. Hey, Jilly, I'm Jill's husband, actually.
Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night, the phone. Make sure the kids hear words. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by, you know the thing.
Because if you could take care, you were a quartermaster, you can sure and hell take care of running a department store thing, you know, where in the second floor of the ladies department, or whatever, you know what I mean?
Well, I'm sick and tired of smart guys.
You know, the rapidly rising
you ever been to a caucus? No, you haven't. You're a lying, dog-faced pony soldier.
What kind of country are we going to be? Four more years of George, he's going to find ourselves in a position where if Trump gets elected, we're going to be in a different world.
You know, George Trump.
You know, we have to come together. That's why I'm running. I'm running as a proud Democrat for the Senate. And Representatives Shirley Jackson Lee, Al Green, Sylvia Garcia, Lizzie Pinelli, Pinnell, and what am I doing here? I'm going to lose track here. And
We choose science over fiction. We choose truth over facts. And so, folks, if you're interested, join me. I could use the help.
Have you taken a cognitive
test? No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man.
I had never heard that last one.
Why would I take a test?
Because you're brain dead.
Come on, man.
I never heard that one.
So, we go back to yesterday at the end of the whole, leave it down for just a second, at the end of the president's meeting with Democrats.
And I'm happy to take questions if that's what I'm supposed to do, Nance, whatever you want me to do.
And we fade to black. They cut the feed before one question. Oh, God bless him. And I mean that sincerely. I pray for the president every morning. Yeah. It's the third hour of the morning show with Preston Scott, right after news. Morning. Welcome to hour number three. I literally get to turn the page on the rundown of the program this morning. Show 4420 of the morning show with Preston Scott. Grant Allen over there running the broadcast in Studio 1A. I am here relegated to Studio 1B, as I have been for a long, long time. And in the course of doing this show, I've had the privilege of interviewing a lot of authors of books. It's one of the joys that I have here, is introducing you to topics and stories that you might not have ever heard. And this absolutely qualifies as one of them. And so it's great to have with me Andrea Williams. She's author of the book Baseball's Leading Lady. Andrea, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. This is springtime. This is baseball season. This was such a perfect fit for so many reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Baseball's Leading Lady, how does this story begin for you personally? When did it come on your radar and how?
It starts for me in the summer of 2004 after I graduated from undergrad. I graduated with a degree in sport management from George Southern University. Went back home to Kansas City, where I'm from, and got a job at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And the very first day I was there at work, I was given a tour of the museum. And the exhibit is arranged chronologically. So you have to learn the story of black baseball. You have to learn the history from the 1800s, from the implementation of this gentleman's agreement that forces black players out of the professional game. Before you can take the field of legends, where in the middle of the exhibit there are these life-size bronze statues of players like Josh Gibson, Satchel Paige, Oscar Charleston. But about halfway through, there is this picture of this woman with a man, and I knew immediately that picture was significant. And I asked Bob Kendrick, who was giving me the tour. He's now the president of the museum, and he told me a little bit about Effa, and I just went to the races from there. At the time, I wanted to work in the front office of a Major League Baseball team. And so to learn that this woman essentially did that, ran a baseball team in the 1930s and 40s, I was immediately fascinated, for sure.
The story of Effa Manley culminates to a certain extent. I mean, we can make the argument that it's still an unfolding story with your book, Andrea, but it culminates with her being the only woman inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. But let's go ahead and get everyone to that moment. Walk us through, in little bits and pieces here, the Effa Manley story. How did she become involved in baseball and why?
Yeah. She married a guy, essentially. Now, basically, baseball. She was always a baseball fan. She grew up in Philly and graduated from high school, moved to Harlem, and was in the Harlem in the 1920s, and was just really walking distance to the Polo Grounds. So went to a lot of Yankees games and was a baseball fan. But she married a guy who was a black baseball fan and who had previously owned a team. Her husband Abe had purchased the Camden Leafs in 1929, and that team just didn't last long because of the Great Depression. So he's married to Effa now, and he decides to go back into the baseball business. So together, they purchased at the time it was the Brooklyn Eagles in 1935. The following season in 1936, they moved the team to Newark. And they are a part of the Negro National League, the second Negro National League. The first one was founded by Ruth Foster in 1920. It died with the Great Depression as well. Also, you know, in part because of Ruth Foster's own passing. But fast forward to late 1932, and Gus Greenlee, who owned the Pittsburgh Crawfords and introduced the world to Satchel Paige, he has started a new Negro National League, and Effa and Abe's team become part of that league. And really, from the very beginning, you know, while Abe is on the road, on scouting trips or barnstorming trips, she is in the office figuring out how to run a baseball team. She's purchasing equipment, uniforms, she's scheduling games, she's handling all the PR and media relations for the club, she's handling contracts and negotiations with the players. She's doing all of those things and really was self-taught. And, you know, over the course of the year, the team got better and better and better. They were able to bring on great players like Larry Doby and Monty Irvin and Don Nickel. And ultimately, her team won in 1946 the Negro World Series, beating the Kansas City Monarchs in 7 games.
Hold on there, Andrea. I got to take a break for weather and traffic, coming right back. It's a great story. It's called Baseball's Leading Lady. The author, Andrea Williams, with me on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Everything you need. Truth and entertainment. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Coming up to 12 minutes past the hour, if you're listening to us on iHeartRadio, welcome. Thanks very much for making time for us this morning across the country. And for those of you on terrestrial radio, good morning if you're just joining us. We have the author of the book, Baseball's Leading Lady, published by Macmillan. You can find it on all of the outlets. It's the story of Effa Manley, and the author Andrea Williams with me. So her team wins the World Series for Negro League Baseball. And Andrea, kind of give us a snapshot of and freeze the moment in time for me, in the sense that, was she aware? Were the players that were on her team aware of the significance of what she was doing at that time? Or was she just doing her job?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. She was definitely doing her job. You know, I've had people ask if she understood what it meant for her to be a woman, you know, doing this during this era in our history. And I think she probably did, but I know she didn't really focus on it. She really did just want to put together a great team. More importantly, she really wanted to give back to the black community. She saw black baseball on the whole and her team individually as these incredible platforms to be of service to her people. So, you know, she was providing jobs. She would, you know, at baseball games, host anti-lynching protests and raise money for the NAACP. So those were the things that she focused on more than being some female pioneer. I think her players too, you know, they were honestly just excited about being able to play baseball professionally, to make money doing it. And to be honest, a lot of them were, you know, thinking about what was next for them. You know, by this point, when they win the 46 World Series, you know, we are well into integration or desegregation of the major leagues. You know, at this point, Jackie Robinson is in Montreal already. So there are whispers, and there are, you know, who is going to be next? Is this going to be, you know, are the floodgates going to open for more of us now that Jackie has gone in to this minor league team? So, yeah.
It's a fascinating story because of not just the culture of the time, but I want to say the aura that surrounded Negro League baseball. You know, my dad was a sportscaster for one of the major networks, Andrea, and I asked Dad, I said, "Did you ever see Babe Ruth hit a baseball?" He said, "Yep." He said, "But you should have seen Josh Gibson." And he proceeded to tell me the story of one of his most favorite things to do as a kid was climbing the fences to watch Josh Gibson and watch the Negro League players play. He said, "It's just a shame these guys didn't get a chance to play against the rest of them in their prime." When Effa is running this team, is she just managing the team the best she can, or is she looking out at the changing landscape of Major League Baseball?
Yeah, it was 100% both. You know, as the landscape starts to shift, she ultimately tries to shift her business with it as well. She ran her team, but also was really involved in the operations of the Negro National League on the whole. So she was lobbying. She was, you know, asking, trying to figure out a way. Maybe the Negro Leagues can become official minor league partners for Major League Baseball. We will continue to develop black talent, and then when they're ready to go, you guys can come and pay us for them, and they will join your team. That was the better alternative to Branch Rickey coming in and stealing players without paying for their contracts, which is really how integration happened. He didn't pay for Jackie Robinson. He didn't pay for Don Newcomb when he came to her team. He didn't pay for Roy Campanella from the Baltimore Eli Giants. So he was 100%, and I like to say, you know, jokingly but really not, that as a woman, she really had the foresight, right? Like, she's juggling multiple things. She's thinking about the right now for her team and putting together a winning ball club, but she's 100% also thinking about the future.
Andrea, stand by. We've got one more segment with her after a brief break. The subject of the book is Effa Manley, baseball's leading lady. Author Andrea Williams with me on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
Hey, so here we go.
An iHeart's radio station.
Minutes after the hour, The Morning Show with Preston Scott, final segment, author Andrea Williams. The book, Baseball's Leading Lady, it's the story of Effa Manley. And you can get it at all the outlets, including BarnesandNobles.com. And one more segment here with Andrea. Andrea, the end of the Negro Leagues, you mentioned you started the Chronicle the way that the leagues kind of fell apart with the integration of Major League Baseball. What, and I'm asking you to kind of take on a hypothetical here. What do you think happens to the Negro League if things are handled differently on the Major League end, where they kind of respectfully work with the owners of the Negro League teams like Effa Manley and they honor contracts, et cetera? What happens to the Negro League?
I think the Negro Leagues are able to stick around. They're able to run for a lot longer, which means lots of things. It means that, you know, number one, we maintain ownership in the black community, right? So we look at the professional sports landscape right now, these multi-billion-dollar industries, and there's really not much black ownership. Well, we had black ownership in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Also, really, if we narrow back down on baseball, it provides an opportunity for more black people to play baseball. So immediately after, you know, Jackie, we start to see the decline of the Negro Leagues. It happens pretty quickly, but it takes until 1959 for every major league team to get at least one black player, to sign at least one. And there's a quota system after that. You can only have two or three black players on the team. And so what that means is that, because at this point, the Negro Leagues really no longer exist, not in their current form, or not in their previous form, I should say. So now there's not really a place for black players to go. Certainly if you're not the best of the best. You know, you can't, you know, the major league teams only want the absolute best pitcher in the rotation, the ace, if you will. You've got to be that great if you're a black pitcher. If you're okay, now you can't fall back on the Negro Leagues. They don't exist anymore. So I think if Major League Baseball dealt fairly, we would have had the Negro Leagues lasting longer into the future, providing more opportunities for black players. And I think ultimately we would see better business dealings into the future. I think ultimately integration would have still been the end goal, but we would have come from a better position of power. Maybe some of those teams would have been able to stay intact. Maybe the leagues would have been able to stay intact as EFA had hoped for.
What happened with EFA Manly with the transition of the Negro League and the Newark Eagles?
Yeah, her and her husband sold the team in 1948 to a couple business partners coming out of Memphis. And in the book, I call it EFA's Last Stand. But the very last contract she negotiated, she arranged for Monty Irvin to play for the New York Giants. He was still signed to the team. But once news got out that they had sold the team, Branch Rickey immediately swooped in and tried to sign away Monty Irvin's contract. Or tried to sign Monty Irvin without paying for his contract. And EFA this time, you know, she knows she's leaving baseball. She's finally deciding to speak up and sends a lawyer, essentially, to tell him that he is still under contract. So Branch Rickey released him. Everyone is upset. You know, the black community is upset. Monty Irvin's upset. Everyone thinks that EFA is getting in the way of his dream of playing in the majors. And really, she just wanted to force Branch Rickey to honor the contracts in the Negro Leagues. And once he was released, she was able to get him signed with the New York Giants. And then she moved away, but she really spent the rest of her life advocating for the Negro League. So, you know, we see this announcement now from Major League Baseball that now they're elevating the status of the Negro Leagues and considering the Major League level. She was doing that work for the rest of her life. She wrote a book a few years before she passed away. It's really all about, you know, letting people know how incredible the talent was, how incredible the business owners like EFA, like Gus Greenlee, like Ruth Foster were in creating this, you know, these teams and these leagues in this special period of time.
It's a fascinating story. Andra, thanks so very much, and I wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Andrea Williams, and the book is Baseball's Leading Lady, EFA Manly and the Rise and Fall of the Negro Leagues. You can get it again at Barnes & Noble's or any of the book outlets that you are familiar with. I love baseball. I love history. I love the story of the Negro League, although I agree with Andrea. The way that all broke down was a symptom of the times. And so I'm grateful that great players that played in the Negro Leagues are getting more recognition. I'm very pleased with that. 27 minutes after the hour. Come back with a big story in the press box and more on the morning show.
Does this without caffeine? The morning show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Thirty-five minutes after the hour, the morning show with Preston Scott. Good morning. In case you missed it, yesterday's program featured the Babylon Bee anti-racism corporate training course. And so make sure you go back to yesterday's podcast and check that out. It's a very brief presentation that you can do to your staff, with your staff, for your staff, and then you'll know. You got it handled. Simple as that. Because we all know all it takes to change anybody's heart on being a bigot is a course. Just take a course. It's done. Nothing changes a heart better than a good course with some PowerPoint slides.
One slide.
That's our course.
You're right.
That's the one endorsed by the Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Correct.
But we all know that all of these courses that are going on across the country, you know, there you go. That's how you get in there and change your heart, mind, and spirit. You just have a course. Of course. Simple as that. The two SUVs involved in crashes within a few minutes of each other in California earlier in the week, filled with illegal immigrants brought in by traffickers because the United States now welcomes them as a matter of policy. Thank you, President Biden, and members of Congress that are Democrats. And so as a result, 12 people are dead. 13, sorry, as a result of those crashes. And the media should be saying what they would say if it were Donald Trump. If Donald Trump's policies had led to something like this, they would be saying, the blood of these people on your hands, sir. And perhaps that is exactly why Joe Biden doesn't take questions from anybody. Actually, it's because Joe is, and I'm not making fun at all, because dementia's not fun. My mother went through that before she passed. I'm not making fun. But there's a reason why dozens of Democrat members of Congress asked for the president to relinquish his sole ability to fire off a nuke. There is genuine concern that he's not well. But we knew this before he was ever elected. We knew Kamala was going to be running things with, really, Susan Rice and Barack Obama. Barack Obama's got his third term right here. And if you're denying that, you're just in denial because it's apparent. But the policies are destructive to America. And if there's a good thing in all of this, it's that it is now becoming visible to the people in the middle that have learned a harsh lesson. And the harsh lesson is that it's not a good enough reason to not vote for somebody because you personally don't like them. I use this example frequently in the last several months. If I had brain surgery and I have a choice between the best brain surgeon, who's kind of a jerk, and a guy who's a really nice guy but inept, give me the good brain surgeon. I don't care about his ego at that point. I want the job done right. America is learning that lesson right now. Not enough people are learning it, because there are those in this country that do want to see the country fail. They want to see this country become a socialist nation. And one does equal the other. They are equivalents. We come back. An unbelievable development with Black Lives Matter. I mean it. Unbelievable. Rocked my world. And I'm going to share it with you next on The Morning Show.
News first. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Looking at the stories, House canceling votes today amid security threats at the Capitol. They're fanning that to the core.
Give me a break.
Yep. The razor wire. Isn't that ironic? The border's open, and they've got razor wire around the U.S. Capitol. That's incredible. That's incredible.
This is the kind of stuff that really, this will get me fired up for the rest of the day.
We want open borders to the nation, to which I reply, let them live with you, Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and Chuck Schumer. Let them camp on your ground. Let them break into your home. Open up your doors, locks. You have no right to a lock. None. None. If you believe that illegal immigrants should be allowed to just come into the country, you are a freaking hypocrite if you allow a lock on your house. You're a hypocrite. Sorry. Speaking of, Black Lives Matter. The organization, in its financial statement, said it raised over $90 million last year. And so the father of Michael Brown and other activists from Ferguson, Missouri, they believe they are ground zero for the Black Lives Matter movement, which is somewhat true because it's based on the lie that Michael Brown did not bring about his own death by his own actions, which multiple investigations, including a federal one under the Obama administration, determined that Michael Brown was the cause of Michael Brown's death. His actions led to his own death. So setting that aside, Michael Brown's father and other activists in Ferguson are demanding Black Lives Matter pay them $20 million. There you go. In a press release from the International Black Freedom Alliance, Michael Brown Sr. said, "Where is all that money going?" Well, I can tell you where a lot of it's going. It's going to the Democrat Party. One of the co-founders of the International Black Freedom Alliance, "We are not asking for a handout, but for the funding to keep the movement strong where it began. Where the lie began, in Ferguson." And that's exactly the truth. Not only did the officer, not only was he cleared because he acted appropriately, Eric Holder's Department of Justice looked into it, hoping to find a civil rights violation of some kind. They concurred. The witnesses concurred. The evidence was overwhelming. Michael Brown's actions led to his own death, and it's tragic. It's tragic. There's a lesson there about all kinds of things. But they've ruined a man's life because of the irresponsible actions of a young man that cost him his own life. But they've ruined another man and his family's life because they wanted to perpetuate a lie. But that's, again, look, I'm just going to sit back and watch this happen, because the Bible teaches us about building your house on sand, on lies. What happens? Doesn't stand. What does it also say about a house divided against itself? Boom. There you go. Black Lives Matter. Have at each other, everybody. You enjoy how that works out. 46 minutes after the hour. Back with final thought here on the Morning Show with Preston Scott. Minutes after the hour. Glenn Beck coming up next. Rush Limbaugh at noon. Tomorrow on the program, law enforcement in the COVID era. Yeah. Heard from Tallahassee Police Chief Lawrence Revel. Going to talk about some of the same things with Leon County Sheriff Walt McNeil tomorrow. He's got some things he wants to discuss as well, so we'll do a combo of all of those things. We've got What's to Be Friday tomorrow, and of course we will end with some good news. National poll indicates that President Joe Biden's approval rating has slipped in the first month. Now, we've noted that he has gone longer without taking a question from the press or addressing the media than any president in more than a century. Think about that for just a minute. Obviously, they're shielding him. There's no doubt at all. I think it's cruel what his wife has done, allowing him to be in this position. I think it's cruel what the Democrat Party has done in, shall we say, bringing about his election by massaging the electoral process just a little bit. But his policies are going to continue to catch up with him as the reality of them hits people's pocketbooks and the job market and so forth. But here's what I want to zero in on. in this polling by Monmouth, and you take Monmouth polling like all polling with a grain of salt, all polling, all, doesn't matter who does the polling, you take it with a grain of salt. Most accurate polling I've ever seen has been done by the Florida Chamber of Commerce. Mary Johnson and her crew over there, they kill it. But that's it. I mean, in this survey, 8 in 10 Republicans disapprove. Independents are divided, 48% disapproving, 43% approving, which means 9% are undecided. But a greater number of independents disapproving. Well, you helped them get elected. But here's what I want to know. Who the heck are the 20% of the Republicans that think he's doing great?
That's what I thought.
What's wrong with you? There's just, and I welcome any of you to write me if you think you can cite things that he's doing that's wonderful. It's just Preston@iHeartRadio.com. Break it down for me. Give me bullet points. I would love to read that. Welcome you reaching out to me. But the 20% Republicans, to quote Gomer Pyle, shame, shame, shame.
Brought to you by Baronel Heating and Air. It's the Morning Show 180 on WFLA.
Time for the 180. Look back at the program in 180 seconds or less. A lot of information today on the program. A lot of fun. We got a fishing tournament coming up by Salvation Army. Saltwater Classic in early June. We've got a cornhole tournament at the TLC Double C. Yeah, do a double dab on that with a little flourish. So Grant Allen's limbering up the right arm and bicep and wrist as we speak. He's getting his form. Talk to Steve Stewart. Nikki Fried in the spotlight for all the wrong reasons. Lots of questions. Documents. Don't be mad at the messenger. Don't be mad at the messenger. Look at the documents. Get your skirt unwound and just look at the evidence. TallahasseeReports.com. See the data. Ask yourself, does this look normal? Well, yeah, for Washington, D.C., it does. Not Florida. Dr. Steve Steverson said cats have hypertension. And we had a great visit with Andrea Williams in the book Baseball's Leading Lady. We'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.